Rock and roll. We got another Build Your Legacy webinar podcast with the man, the myth, the legend, Andy McMullen. And of course, our special guest today, we got Johnny D, also known as John Dessauer, in the house. Hope you guys are doing well. Welcome, Johnny. How you doing, my friend?
I am doing fantastic. I appreciate you having me. I'm excited. And anytime I can have a guy come on like Irish Kevin and say he does 1500 push-ups, I'm ready. Like, that pumps me up.
That's hilarious. All right, cool, guys. Today we're going to be chatting it up a little bit about large scale multifamily debt and equity. As you guys will find out, Johnny D's got a lending company, or participates with one, is also a fantastic capital raiser. We're going to go into lending climate, raising capital, of course, mindset for scaling, forcing appreciation, all the good stuff that you guys love about multifamily and syndication. And of course, I have The Science of Getting Rich, which Johnny D wrote his own version called The Alchemy of Wealth, which I got autographed, I think, like 10 or 15 years ago, something like
Very
that.
Very cool.
And then also Tips to Be a Successful Real Estate Syndicator. And then, of course, I have his other book, Real Estate H2O. And if you guys don't know, he's got at least a third book called Apartment Confidential. So he's a very well-known and respected author, one of the most sought-out multifamily instructors across the country. I know you've been hanging out with Jake and Gino doing the emceeing over there at their conferences. So welcome, man.
Yeah, right, I appreciate you having me. All those things you just mentioned, Ruben, like I told you earlier, I feel that means I'm old, that I'm able to accomplish all that. But I feel great. I am excited to be here. So let's rock and roll. Whatever you want to talk about, I'm ready to deliver it.
Cool. So the first thing that I want to mention is that back in 2006 and 2007, I was introduced to a real estate company, an education company called Nouveau Riche, which is then split off and morphed into a new company, Renatus. You're an instructor there. You were the most entertaining speaker. And once I heard you talk about multifamily and cap rates and forcing appreciation, I was so hooked. I got to tell you, I started getting into fourplexes and 12plexes. And of course, you were doing stuff that was larger than that. But I never heard you talk about the word syndication. So with the education that you are participating in now, are you bringing up syndication more? Are you still talking about like 12plexes and 20plexes?
Yeah, I talk about syndication. I talk about 12plexes too, because what's interesting about what has happened since that point, since, let's call it about 2000. I started my career, let's call it the late 90s. And the interesting thing with that is, as the progression of technology happened, the internet, of course, real estate education, courses, seminars, and things like that, a lot of people got involved in, you know, this idea of, hey, let's buy a single family house and flip it. Let's buy an apartment building and, you know, raise rents and do well with that. Let's syndicate deals. So this has been kind of a transition that's been happening, you know, over the last, say, 30 years. And it's been a wonderful ride to be a part of it. But I love talking about multifamily, whether it's 6 units, 12 units, or even a large syndication project, because I think I boil it down to this. I grew up in the apartment side of the world in Chicago. I live just outside there now. But, you know, growing up in apartments, you learn that business from the inside looking out. And with most people that come into this business, they're learning from the outside looking in. So it was a unique perspective. But anytime you can buy an asset, a hard asset, which is so important today with the economy and where we're going in the printing of money and all of this stuff, when you can buy an asset and have that asset be supported by its tenants, it puts the owner, the investor, the real estate partnership, or the syndication in a really good position, as long as you buy that property right and you're doing the things right on the asset management side to drive the value and the cash flow and NOI.
Phenomenal. Okay, cool. So tell us about, when did you start doing stuff that's in the 50 unit plus range? How long has that been a part of your life?
I probably started that around 03, 04, something like that, about 20 years ago. It was a progression. My first ever purchase was a duplex. I started going up from there. But when I started to get into the bigger, you know, 40, 50 model, it led me to a different set of leverage, not just on the financial side, but on the people side. So I was able, you know, I have this rule that, you know, the 40-50 mark, that supports one employee. It could be a manager, it could be a maintenance person. So if you have 80, obviously 80 to 100, that's going to support two. And so that's really the progression that started my company. That's really the progression that started this whole idea of scaling with real estate investing.
Talk a little bit about that part of it, the scaling part, because I think we're a lot of capital raisers here, a lot of aspiring syndicators. There's some people that have done some pretty big deals here. And, you know, I've heard you talk a lot about like the sales side. So maybe the conversation that you're having with these folks that you're getting on the phone in order to scale this business, because we focus so much now on the marketing part of it, right? Yeah. And I would love to see more people consider how important actually when you get people on the phone or meet them in person. I've heard you kind of compare it to pharmaceuticals. So maybe you could bring that to our audience a little bit.
Yeah, most people know the X's and O's of commercial real estate. They know cap rates. They know the formula for cap rate, you know, NOI divided by sales price. They know things about the market cap rate. They also know things about lending and all of the interest rates and just different things with that. Very few of us as either syndicators or real estate investors know about the million-dollar skill set that people should have either themselves or on their team, and that's sales. You still have to close the seller of the property. You still have to close the banker to give you the money. You still have to close, you know, maybe some partners in this or some other people. If you're syndicating, you got to close the limited partners in the deal. And so I talk about sales because it goes under the rug with regard to priority of skill sets. And it's probably in my career, 25, 30 years of doing this, it's probably been the number one thing for me that has allowed me to get deals, that has allowed me to get money, that has allowed me to get other things outside of that space, including my wife. She's not here, so I can talk about that. But that sales skill and having that ability to have that conversation and being a solution provider, because I'm telling you, as sure as I'm sitting here, 2023, how it started will not be how it ends. It's going to provide a lot of opportunities for a lot of people. You've probably heard this before, but it's going to be that sales skill that everybody needs to put in place that's going to make the difference.
And just to tease it out a little bit, so there's a lot of kind of approaches, right? You got, you know, spin selling, you got kind of challenger sale, you got a lot of different approaches. So what do you consider to be kind of, if you were break it down in a conversation, maybe think of these capital raisers, they're getting on the phone with an investor or getting on the phone with a partner or having that conversation. What are those pieces of the puzzle that you want them to kind of think about pulling together? Can you?
Yeah, it's interesting you said spin sale. So let me break that down for everybody. So spin is an acronym. So spin, S stands for situation. You always want to talk to the person that you're in front of about whatever their situation is. So if it's a seller, if it's a lender, if it's a person or prospect that is going to be your general partner, I want to know their situation. That always leads, I'll repeat that, that always leads to a problem to solve. If you want to be a good salesperson, you need to understand the situation of the person in front of you and the problem to solve. Now, there's two things that come from that problem. It could be lack of money. It could be too much money. It could be other things that are identified as a problem. You don't know what that is. And I always never try to second guess what that is. Just go with the conversation of what the problem is. There's two things that come from a problem, and both of those things fall into the eye of spin. So situation, problem, and the I is, what does that imply? What does that lead to? Implication, what is that? And there's two things, good and bad. I always start with the bad, always. And so when I talk about, you know, where would that problem lead to? What would that imply? Where would that go down the road to? Well, that could be loss of income. That could be not being able to keep up with inflation. It could be, I've got a building that needs repair and I don't have the capital funds to put into, or the CapEx to put into the building. So my tenants are going to move out, all kinds of things. So I start with the bad. And what I want to do, I'm hitting on that implication of negative or bad, is I want that pain module. I don't want to purposely hurt anybody, but I want that pain module that happens in every single mammal on the planet to increase that cortisol that's going on in the pharmacy, which is our brains. Every mammal has this situation. When stress is involved or implemented, the brain goes to work and creates a prescription for that. And the prescription is cortisol. Cortisol is released by the brain in times of stress. So I want to hit that a little bit. When that happens, and again, I don't want to hurt anybody on purpose. It's just part of the sales process. That's the best time ever in the sales process, whether you're selling pharmaceuticals, whether you're selling cars, whether you're selling an opportunity for a syndication. That's the best time to implement good news. The body, the person, the prospect is most open for that. So when I transition from that negative implication to the positive, I will start with something like this, Andy and Ruben. I'll say, Andy, you ready for some good news? How about some good news? You ready for that?
Yeah, let's hear some good news.
Okay, boom. At that point, they're the most open for good news because they got a little bit of hit of cortisol. Now, when I say that one sentence, in Andy's mind, what's changed from a chemistry standpoint in his brain from a sales perspective? What chemical is coming out?
Not endorphins or the
dopamine,
serotonin, like the serotonin.
Adrenaline.
Well, I'm actually looking for dopamine. But yeah, there's other parts to it, but I'm looking for dopamine. I read 2 books. I read 32 books in 2022. I'm on that pace for 2023. And two of the books that stood out to me was The Molecule of More and also The Happiness Hypothesis by Dr. Jonathan Haidt. All of these books were talking about dopamine in the sales process and dopamine throughout life. It's the most important chemical. Well, I shouldn't say the most. One of the most important chemicals that we have going on up here. But it's really, really important in this sales process. When I go to Andy and I say, "You ready for good news?" The cortisol level is dropping. The dopamine hit is increasing. We all look for dopamine hits throughout life. Every day we're looking for that. We're addicted to that. It's in our evolutionary biology that this is happening. So when I do that, then Andy, I'm using Andy, not Ruben, as my sales example here, but then Andy is most open for whatever solution that I'm going to bring to him. If I was selling cars, I would introduce the best car on the lot or in the showroom floor. If I was selling pharmaceuticals, that's what I'm going to introduce, the best pharmaceutical that's going to solve Andy's problem. That's when I start to deliver on the positive side what my need is. And what Andy's need is whatever I'm selling. It could be money on the lending side. You mentioned Oppenheimer Realty Capital. It could be, you know, if I'm renting out an apartment unit and I'm in front of a tenant, it could be the need to rent that apartment unit at the price that I'm renting it at. It could be a GMC Sierra 2023 truck that somebody has that I'm selling to that person. So I'm giving them that need, and that truck, that pharmaceutical, that bed, whatever I'm selling is going to be the solution to the need of Andy. And if I go down that path of spin selling, since you mentioned that earlier, if you break it down like that, no matter what situation you're in with multifamily units, because you got to sell the banker, you got to sell the seller, you got to sell maybe your spouse or business partners, and you got to sell the people, the general partner, if that's not you, and the limited partners in the syndication process, that's a really good model to follow.
That's excellent. Ruben, I'll let you take the mic. One kind of comment on that. We talk a lot with our team about like the face-to-face, and that kind of fits into what you're talking about. Like a phone call, you'll get that, you know, dopamine hit or endorphin, you know, coming from like an actual conversation or breaking bread with somebody. You get like maybe a little smidge when you open up some great marketing, but it's very, very, it's not going to hit you in the same way that picking up the phone and actually selling and talking to people. So great
stuff. Can I hit on that one second?
Yeah,
sure. Just hit on that? Let's talk about marketing. Marketing in 2023, we are numb to marketing. And the reason that we're numb to marketing is, you know, this and our internet and email and ads and social media and all of these things that we miss the majority of the good marketing that comes out. Marketing is important, but what is more important, if you can market all you want, but if you can't convert through the sales process, it's going to do you no good. So you can spend a lot of money and time on marketing, but the way that you improve that marketing performance is to have good sales skills.
Excellent. Let's jump into capital raising. So I've heard you say that raising capital can mean a couple of things. It could mean raising equity. It could mean raising debt. What do we need to know in 2023 about lending and raising money that you would suggest we hear about?
Yeah, so it's an interesting year so far, isn't it? We've got some things that are happening that are making things interesting, right? If this was a book or a movie that we were watching, we would be in the drama part portion of it right now with regard to that. 2023 is going to be an interesting year. I think it's going to end up differently than it starts out. I've seen this play out in my 30 years a couple times before, and we've got some headwinds coming. I look at that completely as a positive for real estate investors down the road. Examples of headwinds would be like the 2008 crisis. Look what BlackRock was able to do with that. It could be the savings and loan scandal of the late 80s, right at the early 90s there. Look at what real estate investors were able to do with that, with the Resolution Trust Act from the government. All of these things that people are saying that are negative and maybe are fearful of always produce huge and positive results. I can even go back further. Look at the 1907 earthquake in San Francisco. That is actually how Bank of America got started, from that tragedy. So what we're having here in 2023 is higher interest rates. This has been happening to tame inflation. The Fed comes in and does that. You're starting to see repercussions from that right now in the banking industry, certainly with Silicon Valley Bank and Credit Suisse and some of the others. But we're going to see next a credit crunch. And then as we see a credit crunch, this is all going to play out in the lending side. The source of capital is tighter right now. The source of capital is more expensive right now. And the lending requirements and standards are a little bit more stringent as well. We are going to continue to see that throughout 2023. And what that's going to produce is an auto accident up ahead. We're on an interstate right now and we're driving. We're slower. We're starting to see traffic build a little bit. We're not driving, 80 down a 65 mile per hour speed limit. We're kind of at, 65 right now, maybe 60, maybe 55 in some cases, but we will slow a lot further than that. And I don't say that to present to anybody that this is gloom and doom. I present this so that people are ready for what they're about to see with traffic coming up and why this, I believe, is another opportunity. I hear a lot of people say this is the greatest opportunity of our lives. I don't know if I would go that far. It might be, but I do think it's going to be an opportunity just like every tragedy before. So tightening of credit is going to happen, and that is going to affect the multifamily market. So if you're in a capital raise situation, again, using that spin dialogue that we talked earlier is going to be very, very important. Capital is looking for a return right now. It always does. And that return is harder and harder to get. And money that's already been put out into, let's say, multifamily properties, I put these things in a couple of different categories. If the property was bought in 2018 or sooner, chances are those people have overpaid for that property, specifically during the COVID years, 2020, 2021. You're going to have a repercussion with that, with the decompression of cap rates and also rent amounts going down that we're seeing. I just read a study yesterday that how much they're coming down. So that's going to affect the financial performance of those apartment buildings. But when those loans are resetting, because a lot of loans on the commercial side reset, starting 2023, 2024, that's where you're going to see the opportunities for you to put in new, fresh capital. We'll talk about where to get that here in a second, but new, fresh capital into those units. There's two sides to every deal. There's the debt side and the equity side. You want to pay attention to both of them right now. Ruben, as I've told you in the past, you've heard me say it maybe several times, 65% of your efforts all the time need to be spent on raising capital and understanding capital and meeting with banks, meeting at the equity side of every deal. 65%, that's how important it is.
So if you do the math there, if you got a 5-person team, that's at least 3 guys that are focused on marketing, raising capital, and bringing in the equity and that stuff. Tell us a little bit about what you do at Oppenheimer and how you can help capital raisers in any regard.
Yeah. So at Oppenheimer Realty Capital, it's oppenheimercap.com. If you go there, that's our commercial lending side. We lend on everything from single family house flips to multifamily units to, gosh, we looked at all kinds of things. We looked at a grow facility, a marijuana grow facility. We looked at hotels. Mostly though, our lane is really apartment buildings, single family houses and development. Like if you're doing subdivisions, we're all over that. You're doing build for rents, we're on that as well. That's kind of our lending side. We work on the debt side, not necessarily the equity side. We're more flexible than banks. But we also, depending on what we do with the capital stack and how we put that deal together, we're probably a group that will allow some creative things in the deal as well. And you don't see that a lot today. So that's a little bit about Oppenheimer.
Can we go a little deeper on that? So you mentioned a couple of things there. What kind of maybe additional things that you might be able to put in a deal? I think for most of the people here, they kind of have a base understanding of where rates are, where SOFR is, where kind of the 10-year treasury is, but they haven't really kind of focused on how that's changed a little bit. Obviously, the loan to cost has come down quite a bit. So equity is certainly needed, at least to get to that kind of next 20-30% of the stack. So maybe if you don't mind just talking a little bit more about how like some of the term sheets have changed that people are a little bit surprised by and how you can account for that.
Yeah, our biggest thing on the term sheets right now is, of course, the interest rate environment. And you mentioned the 10-year treasury. That really dove down last week. It's coming up a little bit here today. That has everything to do with risk. The treasuries are important because, as you see from Silicon Valley Bank, you know, they borrowed from the Fed and took a lot of that money and bought treasuries. And what they realized was the treasuries that they bought, let's say they bought a $200,000 house when they had the bank run, they had to raise capital. So they had to sell those treasuries. And if they bought the house at 200, now it's only worth 100. So hence, that's what the problem was. So that 10-year treasury doesn't directly affect mortgage rates, but it indirectly does. And that's something that you're going to want to pay attention to. And that will dictate kind of the interest rate price. Loan to value. Let's talk about that. That's changed a little bit over the last 12 months as well. The lending environment is, when I say there's a credit crunch coming, the lending environment is always measuring risk. And so where the lenders are seeing risk in the marketplace today is that very aspect that I just talked about. If you've bought a property over the last 5 years on the commercial side, doesn't have to be just multifamily, it could be storage units, it could be a hotel, anything on the commercial side, you're probably going to see in that market, with maybe few exceptions, that cap rate decompressing. That means that that income stream or the net operating income is becoming less expensive in the marketplace. There's less demand for that. You have less because there's less money in the capital space. People are buying less apartment buildings and units. So you're starting to see the inventory grow a little bit. I personally think that's healthy for the market. What has happened I keep calling it the COVID years. It sounds like a TV show from the 80s, but during the COVID years, the cap rates and price points of buildings and real estate in general were just ridiculous, unsustainable. And so I always look at investor psychology in times like that. We saw this in 06, 07, and then in 08, we kind of knew what happened with the great Lehman Brothers moment. We kind of see that build up now with Silicon Valley Bank. I think although it's a little bit different, I think what you're going to see is by the end of 2023, people will realize how significant of an event this whole process is with interest rates and what it does to the fabric of our lending environment. But loan to values have changed. They've pulled back a little bit. So maybe from 80 to 75, 75 to 70, maybe even to 65, depending on the project. So that's why it's important to really increase and focus on the equity side of the deal, getting that capital raise, getting that in place. One of the best spots for that today are things like the self-direct market, where you've got self-directed IRAs, self-directed 401k plans. If you're going to build any marketing plan at all, I would have a website built and tailored to raising capital and really focus on that self-direct side of things, because that money in particular has seen a really big downfall with stocks, mutual funds, that type of thing over the last year. I see that continuing. The corporate market is as frothy and over frothy as the real estate market has been. I think you're going to see further decline in that. So when you've got people invested their retirement accounts through there, Again, they're looking for a good, healthy return. A lot of people don't even know about the self-direct idea and that you can take control of those funds. There's some rules you got to follow with that. But that's where I would put my focus over the next 12 to 18 months if you're raising capital.
Last time I spoke with you, you had a marketing agency that helped with everything from wraps to website and marketing programs. So you mentioned website creation. We have a lot of people in love with the capital raising side of the business here on this call today. Anything that you would recommend that they put on their website, or how would you even begin to market to somebody or a group of people that have self-directed accounts that are already designed specifically for investing, but may not be aware that they can self-direct into real estate or syndications?
Yeah, Ruben, great question. The biggest challenge I see with websites is they become billboards for people. They're just a billboard, but they're not a salesperson. And so the biggest change that I would encourage people to make is to take their website and really see if it's a sales process. Let's go back to what we just discussed, SPIN. Is it identifying the situation of most people with a 401k or most people with an IRA? Is it also talking about the problem with that, especially in 2023? And then what does that imply, both bad and good? Just walk through the model. And then what is the need? And then the need is everything that you're selling. So if this is your website, what you're selling is an opportunity to participate on the equity side of your deal, and you're giving a more than healthy return, whether that's 8, 10, 12%, whatever that is that you've chosen, that's going to be a heck of a lot better than most people are getting from a return standpoint on that market. You also might want to, I always think it's important to talk about some general things with investing, but we kind of gloss over them. Like, for instance, the rule of 72. I think it's important to talk about that because what that rule does is it shows people how long it takes for their money to double at the current interest rate that they're getting. So if they're getting a 2% interest rate and you divide that into 72, your money's going to double every 36 years, Ruben. Who has the time for 36 years? But what if you could put yourself in a position where, let's say that you get a 12% return, a person would get a 12% return on their money. That divided into 72, if my math serves me correctly, is 6. So you could tell the story of why you'd want to go after something with a little bit better return in a situation where you're secured, you're insured and protected on the equity side, for instance, where you have a promissory note, a mortgage, you're going to be listed as loss payee on the insurance side of things, where you can inject those funds and get a little bit higher interest rate and have, instead of a 36-year turn to double money, a 6-year turn. Then what I do is I just tell a story from there. This might be a secondary approach from your website, by the way. It might be an approach where if you're talking to somebody face-to-face or on Zoom, I might say, you know, Andy, you could probably see how important it is, you know, at our age, although Andy, you're probably a lot younger than me. Let's say that you're, Andy, you probably look like 32. Are you 30?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll there's go. There's the dopamine. There's the dopamine.
Okay. See what I just did for you? What are you, 40? What are you?
Yeah. 40, 48.
You're 40. Let's use 40. Actually, let's use 48. If I'm talking to Andy and I know he's 48, even though he doesn't look it, another dopamine hit for you. I'm going to talk to him in terms of these 6-year cycles. If I talk to them in terms of the 36-year cycles, getting a 2% return on investment, that's where I'm going to start. What does that imply? Well, the negative is, hey, you're getting doubled your money every 36 years. How does that feel? You know, are you excited about that?
Not too excited, no.
No, not too excited. What if that continues? What if you're able to get a 2% return on your money over the next 10 years? What would that mean for you and your family?
Yeah, I don't know if I have a family.
Cortisol. Well, Andy, I'll tell you what, you ready for some good news?
Yes.
Check this out. We've identified, or my team has identified, and I'm doing a little timeout here, or my network has identified some real estate investments due to the given real estate environment where these loans are resetting and simply the operators today can't refinance them because of one reason or another. We've identified those and we're looking at buying those things at 65 cents on the dollar and really solving that problem for not only the operator of that property, but maybe even the lender at that time. But why that's important for you is we are looking to build our network on the equity side of that deal. See, we're syndicators. And as we bring people in to put their money on the equity side, we find by doing three things to the property, one could be raising rents, other could be, you know, lowering expenses another way, and maybe add another one in there, that we can really drive the value of this property from $1 million to 1.4. These are targeted, by the way, I'm not guaranteeing this, but that's why the equity side is so important. Because of that, we're able to pay a 10% return on the equity side to our investors. How does that sound to you?
Much better than two. Yeah, absolutely.
Dopamine. So I'm going down the line and I'm ad-libbing here a little bit. I could probably clean it up, Ruben. But the point I'm trying to make is I'm going down that same process of spin with my marketing, with my website. Keep that in mind. Don't make your website a billboard. Make your website a salesperson, and you're going to see that you're going to have an easier time at raising capital if you do that.
That's fantastic. Any last things that we should think about when raising capital for syndications or developments or anything else before we go into mindset?
Yeah, I mean, I would right now put yourself in a long-term lending position if you can. Let's get on the other side of this credit crunch. If you're putting deals together right now, I would also put my feelers out for any properties that were bought over the last couple of years, because economic fundamentals of those multifamily units and other commercial properties are changing dramatically as the cap rate in most markets is decompressing because of a higher interest rate environment. So I would really put my feelers out on that. I'd be in contact with commercial property managers, commercial lenders, commercial investors. They're going to run into a problem in 2023, if they haven't already, and in 2024, and this is where your opportunity is to shine.
Can I just ask one quick, we'll get to mindset, Ruben. This is just really, you know, you were around kind of as I was for the 2000 that happened in certain cities, right? I remember seeing Miami and areas of Florida. And then 2008, 2009 came and it was a kind of a different area. Is there any markets that you feel are maybe a little bit overbought at this point that maybe people should be considering staying away from? Because there's a lot of, we got people all across the country here.
Yeah, I think there's four markets that people talk about right now that are overbought in real estate as a whole. This includes single family: Austin, Texas, Phoenix, Arizona, Denver, Colorado, and the San Jose Bay Area as well. There's some secondary markets to that that are probably overbought as well. You know, your typical New York City and Miami's and things like that. But what I've seen as a real play is these tertiary markets. Now, different than we normally think of tertiary markets. I was on the phone today with somebody talking about the Dayton, Ohio market. I was talking about the Des Moines, Iowa market. And these are tertiary markets that really have good fundamentals involved in them. And they really are going to be the first to bounce back from these higher elevated price points. And they're going to be the first ones that somebody is going to want to enter into that is going to get a good fundamental from a cash flow perspective on real estate. And we've went away from those fundamentals over the COVID years, simply because there was more money printed and also more stimulus and other things out there. It was kind of like the bidding process at like the Barrett Jackson auto auction, if you've ever had a chance to see any of those. The more people that are there with the more money in their pockets, the higher price those cars go. And that's what has happened absolutely over the last few years, but that's significantly changing now.
That's an interesting analogy. I like that Barrett Jackson thing. I'm not sure if they have that outside of Scottsdale, but I've been to a couple of those events. I want to jump into my favorite author, or one of my favorite authors. His name is Wallace D. Wattles. If you guys have not heard of him, he's the predecessor to Napoleon Hill, and I'm taking a plaque off my wall and I'm going to read, just like I did the last time I had you on the show. Getting rich is the result of doing things in a certain way. There is a thinking stuff from which all things are made and which in its original state permeates, penetrates, and fills the interspaces of the universe. A thought in this substance produces the thing that is imagined by thought. I can form things in my thought, and by impressing my thoughts upon the formless substance can cause the thing that I think about to be created. So one of the major premises of Wallace D. Wattles and Napoleon Hill is that thoughts can become things, and by applying certain stimulus to our mind and going into sometimes altered brainwave states and meditation, or just thinking and concentrating on the person that you want to become, you can bring things into reality. And when I had you on the show, I was mentioning the word alchemy and saying, hey, you can't turn led into gold, and you debated with me and proved to me actually that maybe we have a hard time doing that here in Phoenix, Arizona, or somewhere in the world, but in the sun, this is exactly what's happening at nuclear fission level, where you're taking heavy elements or and making, you know, heating them up and using energy into them to the point where they become newer and bigger and heavier elements. So you can take something like hydrogen and eventually over time turn it into gold, which is kind of crazy if you think about it. But so I'd love to dive into this book, Alchemy, The Alchemy of Wealth, which you autographed here about 15 years ago. Tell us a little bit about that book, mindset, why you wrote it, where you wrote it. Actually, let's start there.
Yeah, so let me clean that up a little bit. Every element that we have identified on the periodic table, I'm a little bit of a science nerd, guys, so that's my background from my education side. But every element that we have on Earth that we've identified in the periodic table of elements, it has come from the universe. More importantly, the manufacturing or the making of stars, supernovas, is where this creates. Everything starts from hydrogen. Nuclear fission is what happens in our sun. And that's when two hydrogen atoms hit at the speed of light to get compressed into helium. And that excess energy is what makes the ball of fire for the sun. Basically, these are 30,000 foot terms. So chemistry is really, really important. Changing of lead into gold is a process called alchemy. They've talked about this for years. When I wrote the book, The Alchemy of Wealth, I thought I was going to be into the business section or the investor section at Barnes & Noble and some of these other stores, Borders at the time. And then when I got through that and that process, and they're like, look, we're going to put you in the metaphysical section of the book, awesome. Bookstore. By the way, I didn't care. I just wanted to be in any section of the bookstore. So, but yeah, they put me in the metaphysical section of the bookstore. It was really interesting because I believe that, like, thought, so many things happen with thought. That's transpired not only in my investing career, but throughout my life. In 2022, I think I was telling you earlier, I read 32 books. I'm on pace for that this year. And it has never failed me that through all those books and everything that I read, that this idea of thinking about something and then putting in everything possible into the universe and doing the work, that's the other thing that people don't like to talk about when they're talking about this type of strategy, doing the work behind it, the universe will do everything it can to make that happen for you. I've seen this throughout my life. That's how my children are here. That's how my beautiful wife is here. It's how I live in this house. That's how I've created the businesses. 2022 has been an interesting year for me. I'm a runner, at least I am now. I've run a couple of marathons in 2022. I ran one in 2023 already. My next race is 48 miles. So I've been training for this. And so much of it is mental. So much of it is how you think and why you think that way. And the idea of quitting and having this mindset of creation in the mind to physical change. If I was on camera right now, maybe I'll do this one time with you, Ruben. If I was on camera right now and I was peeling a room temperature lemon, the ripest, most yellow, freshest lemon from the lemon tree, and I was cutting that and I squeezed it in my mouth. I took that and I squeezed that room temperature lemon in my mouth. By the way, how many of you right now are feeling your mouth add more saliva? Do you see? I'm taking something from my mind and I'm affecting you physically. So I know it affects me physically in the physical world. So when I was writing about that in The Alchemy of Wealth, I was just doing that from a perspective of how that helps investors. That's why the power of prayer for so many people are important. That's why the power of meditation is so important for so many people, is it's this process of taking something digitally from the mind and putting it out into the physical world. Now, the work has to go behind it. But that has been a big thing for me, not only since I wrote the book, but, you know, happens every day in my life.
Definitely go check out that book. All right. So chapter 18 of Apartment Confidential is about why do top performers use coaches? Anything we can end off there before we open it up for Q&A from the audience?
Yeah, I'm a Chicago guy, grew up here. So I have to work with one of our most famous athletes that had something to do with Chicago, Will Perdue. No, I'm not going to use Will Perdue. Michael Jordan. Let's use Michael Jordan. You know, Michael Jordan had Phil Jackson and, you know, that whole idea of coaching. Top performers use coaches because coaches can see things that you can't see. coaches have experienced that you haven't yet experienced. And if you can tie into that, what you end up doing is shortening the learning curve. That's what a coach does, is shorten the learning curve for most people. That's why parenting is so important. That's why, you know, how you raise your kids with parenting, which is really a form of coaching. And with your network, you know, I always tell people, and you, everyone on this call webinar has heard this, that you become the five people you hang out with. Why? Because you're being coached by those five people. That's why. So be very careful as to who you surround yourself with, because they become your coaches. The power of coaching is important because of what they can see that you can't. Shortening the learning curve is number two. And finally, number three, they can get you to do things that you can't get yourself to do, whether that's put out an offer, whether that's go to meet with somebody to raise a seven-figure capital raise or eight-figure capital raise, or the confidence to say, hey, I better sell this property now, when most people are trying to hang on to things. And the vice versa of that is true as well. So coaching is real important.
Cool. So if you were putting together a coaching program, or in your coaching, or just in general thinking about syndicators coaching their limited partners to invest with them, what are some of the most effective strategies that a coach employs to get their people to do and, you know, move and get off of their seats?
Yeah, with every one of my students, what I do is I hold, you know, there's an accountability side. We're on the phone once a week. You know, there's assignments that come to you on a weekly basis, three or four times. Sometimes I want to push you a little bit out of your comfort zone. We do an exercise. Probably the biggest thing that I do with my students that is an exercise that adds this discomfort a little bit, that's another thing a coach is going to do, is the elevator pitch in speech. You know, it's this idea of starting that spin process, the situation, problem, what does that imply, both bad and good, and what is the need? The need is the only thing that you're selling, the need. What does that elevator pitch do? I want people to record that. That should be, you know, more than say 60 seconds long, but do you have the skill set to get that out in that 60 seconds where you cover those things? And at the end, either have one of two things, a direction, do this, do that, or a question. Do you or anybody that you know would be interested in anything that I've mentioned so far? Something along those lines, that question hook where you're grabbing them in.
Okay, cool. So let's open it up for Q&A. We might go a little bit over, guys. I'd love to hear what you guys want to know. Go ahead and ask Andy, myself, or particularly Johnny D in this scenario, about anything that you're interested in. All topics are open, whether it's mindset or capital raising or anything else. Andy, you can be the first to ask a question.
Yeah, I'm fascinated with this coaching idea. My dad was a basketball coach my entire life, and certainly we didn't have a lot of dough, but certainly a lot of lessons learned, right? He was part of Wooden's coaching tree. Wooden got him his first college job, which is pretty cool. But so for you, do you have a coach, or have you had a coach? And what were kind of some of the things that you had to break through? Because, you know, we all have our blind spots. It doesn't matter what level we are. Even the Oracle of Omaha has his blind spots. But what were some of the things you had to break through?
Yeah, so I'm from an athletic background. I played 4 years of college basketball, small college basketball. And so coaching has always been a part of my life. I think the biggest thing is you'll see some players that have all kinds of talent. And because they have the talent, they're not as coachable as others. That translates into the financial world as well. Or you see some people that know they have the talent, they're not only not as coachable, but their work ethic isn't really there. And I think that if you want to be coached and take advantage of what the benefits of coaching are, the payment of that, the investment of that really has to be identified by the player or the student in this realm. The workload and understanding of, if I work hard, the coaching is going to work better for me. The harder I work, the better benefits I will have from this coaching. The other side of that is, you almost have to put down the ego with the player or the student and let the coach kind of guide you, as long as it's a good coach. Let the coach kind of guide you. That's tough for players. It's tough for investors, because investors, let's face it, have come from a field. If you started investing 5 years ago or 10 years ago during this last bull market and boom, you don't know what it's like to invest in a market where there's a capital crunch, a credit crunch, real estate values going down, gloom and doom from the media. You don't know what that's like. And so leaving some of that motivation and what to do step by step during those times are going to be really important for the student or player from this analogy, especially in the market that we're going into.
Okay, so Elaine is saying in the chat, I am desperately learning who is the best capital raiser between these three. And she mentions Hunter Thompson, Bridger Pennington, and Brad Blazer. And just to identify a couple more, there's the Real Estate Accelerator that's done by my friends Julie Lamb and Annie Dickerson. And you guys forgot to mention, there's also, wow, there's so many. So Richard Wilson has a family office club and capital raising mentorship program. I'm launching my capital raising program and writing a book with Richard Wilson. Maybe I'll write a book with you one day, Johnny D. That would be awesome.
Let's go. Yeah, let's go.
That's fantastic. So I know that there's some students of Hunter Thompson possibly in the room. Maybe we can open it up for dialogue, but have you heard of any of these three? Can you mention anything that you know about capital raisers or any other programs that I've not mentioned here?
Yeah, I mean, of course, these names come up. Hunter Thompson is a popular name that comes up. I think one that's not on that list is Amy Maggiore. I don't know if you know Amy, but this seems to be a male-dominated industry, and I'd like to see more on the female side from that. I think they have a different perspective. So Amy has a really good program. Matter of fact, she's got an event coming up at the end of April in Los Angeles, if somebody is interested in that. But a lot of these guys have that. Of course, Ruben, yourself, the idea with capital raise is really the mechanism of how you're doing it in the face of what's going on with the economy, the why. Again, I think that your idea of why you want to raise capital in this environment, as we're going into what is forecasted as a recession or going into downturn times, I think people are fearful to deploy capital. And that might be just the thing that in time that you want to put that in place, because look at BlackRock as a perfect example. Look at what Warren Buffett has said. When times are tough, when everyone's going this way, you want to go that way because you're going to get different results in the masses. So I think that's going to be real important for people here taking action.
So Flint name dropped. One of my good friends, Keely Hubbard, is also a sales and capital raising coach. Definitely check out KeelyHubbard.com. And all other, I mean, I would say whoever you resonate with, I know that some people will stick around for a little while and eventually, you know, they don't want to keep on paying $20,000 or $30,000 or whatever the program costs. So you guys want to take that into account. Ask the other students of them. So I know Flint, you were in REA. Tate, I'd love to hear what you are getting out of Race Masters. And I think Bethany was a part of that. Anybody got anything to mention about Race Masters? I'm a big fan of Hunter Thompson and his book.
It is hands down the most powerful thought leadership program platform I've ever been a part of. Yeah, the Slack channel alone is worth the price of admission. 430 capital raisers on one Slack channel, you know, all day, every day, communicating with each other. I found a JV partner through a referral out of Raise Masters that's helping us with an $18 million acquisition. They're bringing the earnest money, the loan, and all of the equity. So, so far, so good. I couldn't be happier, to be honest. I joined in January, so, you know, it's a little bit of a short runway, but I'm thrilled with what I've gotten out of it so far.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with using more than one. I know people like Sanjay Seshadri and a couple others that are in multiple capital raising programs and getting coached by Keely and a couple other places even, and reading a lot of capital raising books. There's a lot of them out there, so I'd highly recommend checking those out. Anybody else want to chime in on any capital raising?
Irish Kevin is, yeah. Do you got a question, Irish? Or
yeah, guys. What's up, Irish? John. Great presentation. I'm just trying to figure out your background, like your priority as far as where did you come from, like up to this point. Like you mentioned you were an investor, a coach, and now you went to funding, I guess you're doing. Like, where did you start and where you think you're going to end up as far as, you know, your future from this point on?
Yeah, it's always good to talk to someone from Oklahoma, Irish. I think total Bostonite coming through there. I got to
tell you. Yeah.
So what's interesting in my journey, my background is multifamily units. I probably have been known for that and investing in those over my, you know, 25, 30 year career here than anything else. And so that's really what I cut my teeth on. I started, my first purchase was a duplex. I went from a duplex to an 8 to a 10 to a 30 to starting getting to 90 and hundreds. And that from there. My two things I focused on was buying the property right, number one. Number two, driving the equity side of that property once I owned it. So good fundamentals of driving NOI and taking that new equity that I bought and using that to buy the next property. So that's probably what I've been known for. That's my background. I've added all these things, the brokerage, the asset management company, the lending, the marketing, all of that stuff as kind of things that we've needed. And then other people have come along and said, you know, can you help me? Can you do this for me? And that's really where that arose. Where I'm going, you know, my focus right now is really on a couple of different things outside of the real estate investing space. I'm still considered a real estate investor and I still keep that as a focus, but my health side has been something that I've really focused on. You know, people ask, you know, there's no sense in having money if you don't have your health, right? And so that's been a huge part of my repertoire over the last 2 years. In the last 2 years, Kevin, I've lost 82 pounds. I've run several marathons. When you were talking about push-ups earlier, you know, that's, you know, I'm working out all the time and that is, I love it. I can't get enough of it. But the second focus is really my son. I've got three children, two are grown, my daughters, and then my son is 8. So I've been focusing on that. We don't, you know, we invest and we want to be a real estate investor for a destination. And I feel like that is kind of where my destination is going. I think sometimes people want me to say, you know, hey, I'm getting into hotels or office buildings or things like that. I've kind of said, hey, I just need to kind of focus on some other areas along with commercial real estate investing. And that's my health and my son and my wife, of course. I can't forget about her or I'm going to be in trouble.
But well, I have to ask about that, John. So you basically get a second chance to, you know, right all the wrongs that you did with your first two daughters. That's got to be pretty cool. Like you've got the wisdom and the health to be able to do this again.
My oldest daughter's 31, my youngest daughter's 29, and my son is 8. So I got like a 21 year span there. And the other thing, Andy, you hit the nail on the head. My father passed when I was 4. And the craziest thing about what I do on a daily basis is the fact that every time I spend with my son, it's like my father spending with me. I don't know how to explain that other than it's the weirdest thing that has happened in my life. The biggest blessing as well, but it's just something that has really taken my attention. And that's why we invest in the first place. That's why we raise capital in the first place. I would challenge everybody on here to kind of think about what their mission is and really have a purposeful, driven mission to something. I didn't know what that was when I started. I didn't know what that was until my son came along. And then I'm like, this is it. You know, sometimes the universe and world and God and reveals themselves in ways that we don't know about. That came with my son. And that's why I invested all those years. That's why I raise capital and go through the sales process. And sometimes I got to use that sales skill on my son. You know, he's 8 and he's a pretty smart dude. And I got to like situation, problem, what does that imply and need? You know, so good question.
Yeah, that's some good dopamine right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Can you explain like the word alchemy? Like it seems like it's used a lot, like a lot of these book titles and stuff. Why did you use that?
I use the word alchemy because it means change. And that's the only thing that's constant in life is changing. You know, I think it's a biblical verse, dust to dust, right? We are made from the very components that make stars. If you break down the human body, but that we're not around forever. So we change. And so alchemy means to change both bad to good or not valuable to valuable and vice versa, valuable to not valuable. And I think we have to be okay with that. A lot of times people are not really good with change, but that's the only thing that's constant in our world. I think Socrates or Plato was the original speaker of that, but that's why I named it. I think truly whatever your situation is, if it's bad, poor right now, you can change it. I know for a fact you can change it. And the reverse is true. If you're sitting high and you're sitting on doing well with money or crypto or money in Silicon Valley Bank, In a moment's notice, you can be in a changed environment. I have one of my best friends in the world. His wife passed last night. I'm not trying to bring everybody down all morning. He's in shock. He's numb. He's shocked. So change is the only thing that's constant. This alchemy of life is the only thing that's constant. That's why have your investing, have your raising capital be a destination. It could be your family, it could be your health, it could be your most precious loved ones. Look at what happened in Nashville. You never know. That's why take your journey and mission and have it be of purpose. And I don't think you can go wrong there.
Cool. So alchemy of wealth is more of like a mindset, the book itself, like when you're going through the book, it's all changing your mindset.
Yeah, absolutely.
Regarding wealth.
Yep, absolutely. It's changing wealth from a mindset perspective, because that's where it all starts. If you don't think about it, if you don't discover it in your mind, you can never bring it out to physical reality. Awesome. Someone told you the idea of doing 1,500 push-ups a day. Someone gave you that reality, whether that's true Andy. Or not. You look straight. You look like you could do that, no problem. But
Andy's the one that's always hopping on me, so I got to keep
him. So he took what was digital in his mind. He gave it to you, and it
transferred it to me, and he's just sitting there watching me.
Yeah, but it came out. It manifested itself physically, not with Andy, but with you. And so it's going to do that somewhere. And that's happened over and over and over, not only in my life, but in people around me as well.
Awesome. Thanks.
That was amazing. Hey, let me ask you about this process of you losing 80 pounds. I noticed that as I became a fund manager and started stressing out about some of my first capital raises and started gaining weight. And then I kept on adding more stuff, more stress to my plate, including, you know, writing books and becoming a podcast host and now launching this program. And I'm actually in the process of really focusing in on getting my weight and some of my other health more balanced. What was your biggest learning lessons in terms of losing the weight and getting back into balancing both business, family, and your personal health?
Yeah, well, for me, it was something that has always been a journey for me. I was an athlete growing up. I was an athlete in college. And, you know, sometimes life gets in the way and then you kind of lose that perspective. So in the last couple of years with that journey, I've completely changed the way I've eaten. I've completely changed my workouts. And of course, I have a purpose to my workouts with these marathons and now these ultra marathons that I'm running. Real simply, there's two things. What you put in your body is fuel. And there's so much junk out there from processed foods and other things. Sugar is the enemy and other things as well. So I focus on eating super, super clean. I don't know how much time we have, but I could do a couple hours on that. And then the second thing is from a working out perspective, I give myself 1 hour a day. It's the rule that I have that I cannot break, at least 1 hour. I actually go more than that. Today, I've got 3 hours of training on schedule, but I give myself at least 1 hour a day. When I started, I really couldn't run. I was walking. But the interesting thing that I learned is I do this thing called zone two training. There's five zones that the heart goes through with respect to training. And there's two energy sources that your body uses. One is fat oxidation. That's zone one and zone two. And zone three, four, and five is glucose. It actually uses sugars from your body for energy. But when you go exercise and do cardio, for instance, in zone two, you're burning fat oxidation. You're using the fat in your body, which has pretty much an unlimited source as fuel. So the reason I was able to drop that weight so fast is I wasn't working out at a high intensity type level. It was this zone two training that has helped me the most with that. And I follow a lot of people, doctors, Dr. Peter Attilia, which I'm actually just reading his book that came out yesterday on longevity right now, but he's the foremost expert in zone two training. That was what helped me on the working outside. And then of course the whole eating and then getting rest and, you know, doing some of the other things that are real important as well.
Anything that you can add about the balancing, scaling as a multifamily investor and, you know, all the other things that you've added to your plate while losing the weight?
Being unrelentless with your schedule. You know, today I'm on a few conference calls. I'm traveling tomorrow. I'm on a plane at 5 a.m. I have a little bit of a honey-do list for my wife. And I've got another training session. I ran 6 miles this morning. I got another 7 to do later this afternoon. But being unrelentless, putting these things in your appointment or calendar, whatever you use, Google Calendar, iCalendar, Franklin Planners, for those of you that have been around for a while, being unrelentless with that and making sure that you're putting your hardest thing first. I want to run in the morning. That's the hardest thing that I do, or my workouts, whether it's lifting or running. I want that first in the morning. If I can do the hardest thing first as a priority, the rest of my day is going to be pretty good. And so that would be the biggest kind of quick tip that I could give people, being unrelentless with your calendar and keeping to those commitments and appointments.
That's fantastic. Andy, any last question of the day or anybody else?
I have to hear it all. So I got to go to the gym sooner than later.
I love it, Kevin. Love it.
Wait, I'm just curious on the zone two, how long does it take your body, for instance, to get to that point? Because I imagine it's a certain time horizon that you hit that zone. Is it based on your heartbeat? What is it based on your heart rate?
It's absolutely based on your heartbeat. You're probably going to want to get that checked to know exactly. But if you wear a heart rate monitor, that's the easiest way to do it.
Whoop that I use.
A whoop, even your iWatch, the Fitbit, the chest strap is probably the most accurate right now for that. But you can also get tested to see what your lactate threshold is. I know I'm getting in the weeds a little bit with this, but that's really the key. Once your lactate threshold gets to a certain amount, then it goes into zone three and you start switching the energy source from fat oxidation to more of a glucose. And so that's why you probably heard that, you know, your muscles get sore and tired after a workout. This is because of the lactate sugar that gets overloaded in your muscles to provide that energy. You know, you're in zone three, four, and five. So to eliminate that, you stay in zone two, stay in that fat oxidation. For the best results, Andy, I would say about 45 minutes in that zone two is going to be most effective. Again, I'm not a doctor, but if you really want some insight on this, go to YouTube and watch the Peter Attilia, either on Joe Rogan or watch, you know, any of his own podcasts, which are called The Drive, talking about this. It's wonderful science and it's absolute. I know this works because I'm a product of it.
That's awesome.
You guys, I have a new book coming out. It's called Alchemy of Health.
The Alchemy of Health. Man.
I love that.
The new book coming out by John.
I love it. I love it.
That's amazing. All right, cool. We went off on a little tangent there, but that was great. I really appreciate your insight. Are you going to be by chance at the Jake and Gino? I think I'm going to make it out this year.
Yep. I'm emceeing, hosting the whole thing.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So I just bought this thing on Frontier where I get unlimited flights. Not the greatest airline in terms of a couple of different things, but for $1,500, I get to fly unlimited for an entire year. So I'm really excited. And I'll probably make it out to Orlando to come check you out.
Awesome, man. I look forward to seeing you.
Cool. All right, man. I really appreciate it. Thanks to everybody for tuning in and we'll see you on the next one. Johnny D, the man, the myth, the legend, man. We'll see you next time, brother.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you guys.
Been a blast. Thanks, everybody.
Legacy Acquisitions.